Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Friends Life results presentation for 2014. Whenever I look at Jan, our investor relations lady, I always worry that when I speak I might give her a miscarriage, so I hope that doesn't happen. I thought I'd say a few words, since hopefully this is the last results presentation Friends will make. We have the shareholder vote later this month, and I can't see any reason why it wouldn't go through. So I just wanted to say a few words. Firstly, I think, you know, the Friends Life results are absolutely excellent. And in spite of the budget a year ago, we've shown that we can grow the business with discipline in terms of new business. And, of course, the management of the heritage business with the cash thrown off has been quite exemplary this last year. So I think it's fair to say that Friends did have a viable strategy as a standalone business. But we're here at Aviva today because the board of Friends really felt that we could accelerate our strategy and give value earlier to shareholders if we got together with Aviva. So I'm delighted that we're in this building sharing our meeting with John and his team. I think at the same time it's a win-win for everybody. The enhanced cash generation that will help Aviva to reduce its gearing and improve dividend paying capacity, so that's got to be good news. And obviously the market now seems to have recognised all this and is welcoming it in the rise in share price that we've seen. I'm pleased to say that on condition on the approval of the proposed offer, second interim dividend of 24.1p, a 10% enhancement to 2013 final dividend will be paid, which results in a full year 2014 dividend of 31.15p per share. The next thing I want to do is just to thank the staff at Friends, led by Andy and his executive team. They've done a fantastic job the last few years getting this business turned around and getting us to a stage where we could actually execute a deal like this. So my thanks, Andy, to everybody. I want to thank my board, some of whom will move across to different roles here at Aviva. They've been a tremendous support to me and a tremendous support to the management team. Challenging, but always in good humour, I think. And we've had a bit of fun along the way. And I actually want to thank John and Mark for their goodwill and professionalism as we negotiated this deal. It's never easy to do this sort of thing, but we've had a very good meetings together and always very sensible and businesslike. So thank you very much indeed. And John, I wish you well at Barclays. It's going to be quite a challenge, but I shall enjoy coming here as Sid to work with Adrian. And Tim, I want to thank you because this is the earliest we've ever produced results in our lives. And all down to you and your finance team who've done a very professional job. So let me now hand over to you and thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Malcolm. And good morning, everybody. And so welcome to the 2014 results presentation for Friends Life, which will be followed by that from Aviva. And our thanks to Mark and to Tom and their superb team for hosting us this morning, which I think makes life easier for us all today. However, we do remain separate groups right now, and thus the Q&A that follows Andy's presentation will just handle questions relating to Friends Life. We have a slightly different running order this morning as well. I'll take you through our performance in 2014 first, then I'll hand you over to Andy, who will summarise how our financially disciplined strategy has generated value and how we're well placed to succeed with Aviva. Well, it's been quite a year, hasn't it? The volume of regulatory change has been substantial, but we have responded quickly and effectively in the period, taking decisions with our customers' interests and rigorous financial discipline at the forefront of our minds. And the benefits of that discipline show in our results. Of course, a major event of 2014 was the successful sale of Lombard, which is therefore excluded from these results. But the delivery of cash today and cash tomorrow remains our mantra, and I think we have delivered strongly. First of all, in the top left, sustainable free surplus is up 15%. And I'm delighted with this result, and I'll trust that you'll forgive me that this is marginally ahead of the guidance which we gave at half year. We'll go into the detail of this growth in a moment, but a significant contributor is in the box centre top, with a growing free surplus expected return in the period, a key characteristic of a truly sustainable business. Our IFRS result is also strong, and as you will see in a minute, Despite the inclusion of some one-off benefits to the headline numbers, the underlying result is also strong. Elsewhere, our MCEV result, bottom left, is marginally off last year, although given the volume of change, particularly in the retirement income space, this is still at a respectable £498 million. Our open insurance new business IRR remains above our 15% performance ambition, although it is lower than last year, reflecting a reduced contribution from the retirement income business. At a group level, IRR has improved, with this including the return on shareholder capital deployed on this year's heritage initiatives. As ever, our capital base remains strong. And finally, but not shown on the slide, and as Malcolm just said, the board has proposed a second interim dividend, which of course depends upon the proposed acquisition by Aviva, and would take the full year dividend to 0.3115 per share. So looking at SFS in a bit more detail. Well, I'm delighted at what we have been able to achieve in terms of cash generation, and this is great testimony to the group's expertise in heritage back book management, whilst also reflecting the disciplined growth and increasing scale of our open businesses. We'll look at the drivers of underlying free surplus across the businesses in detail in a moment, but suffice to say that an 8% growth in group underlying free surplus, where expected in-force returns are growing and investment in new business is falling, is very pleasing. Walking down the rest of the table here, on the left, the development costs are marginally behind those in 2013, although you will remember that at half year, I said that the costs in relation to the new retirement proposition would be reported outside of SFS. Elsewhere, we've seen a modest benefit from operating variances and other items. Cash returns at 25% remain strong and in line with our ambitions set out this time last year. On the right-hand side, the segmental SFS result shows that performance has improved across all divisions. So now let's look at the expected return generated by the UK and Heritage divisions. Well, expected return from these in-force books is understandably the principal source of the group's cash generation. Recognising this, last year I shared with you the run-off profile for the 2013 in-force book and highlighted an expected £39 million increase in 2014 from the 2013 outturn. A recap of that chart is shown inset on the left. Perhaps unsurprisingly, given the progress made in the first half, I'm pleased to report today that we have successfully delivered this target. The principal drivers of this uplift are set out on the right-hand side and include the heritage initiatives that we are all familiar with new business growth in the UK as well, and of course, improved economics, with the benefits equally split, exactly as predicted, across the UK and Heritage divisions. So let's look at the underlying results across the divisions, and I'll start with Heritage. Here, the benefit of increased expected returns is plain to see, but it's not the only driver of the Heritage performance. The reduction in Heritage investment in new business is also important, and this has fallen markedly in 2014, reflecting the ceasing of new business in the non-core OLAB business in 2013. So now these gains have been captured, where will the positives come from next? Well, we will continue to drive these out of the in-force book. And we've set out here on the bottom right a number of initiatives which all contribute to expected return in 2015. In total, these initiatives are expected to generate a further £28 million of recurring surplus from 2015 before day one costs, and will go a long way to helping offset the book's natural runoff. The first of these initiatives is new news today and reflects the successful recapture of £1.6 billion of assets backing annuities. Now, these assets were previously part of a reinsurance transaction through which we had reinsured market and longevity risk. We've now collapsed the asset side of this arrangement, with the longevity swap remaining in place, and will, using our in-house asset management capabilities, reinvest the gilts received into higher yielding assets. The next two initiatives will be familiar concepts, with these repeating the success of the first phase of the with-profits annuity reallocation of 2013. The third phase is already completed this year and will generate approximately £5 million per annum of additional surplus for a day one cost in the region of £25 million. And finally, the previously reported asset transfers from F&C to both Schroders and FLI. And these were completed in the fourth quarter of 2014 and will generate about £3 million of SFS per annum. So as you can see, much has been done over the year in Heritage. But let me move on now to our open businesses. Firstly, corporate benefits, which has really started to flourish. We've consistently said that this is a business where the benefits of scale and efficiency are very important, and our latent scale and cost advantage are now self-apparent. Underlying free surplus at £29 million is up materially in the year, with income levels growing to £122 million, driven by growth in assets under administration. Outgoings have been reduced, driving improved operating leverage to 15 basis points, and I'm very pleased with this performance, although there is always more that can be achieved. APE and regular premium growth, bottom left, have also been strong, with 957 new or auto-enrolling schemes written in the year and a net 169,000 increase in members. Strong net fund flows of £0.6 billion alongside strong net investment returns have driven assets under administration to £22 billion, shown here on the top right. And this has been achieved despite the previously flagged loss of a significant scheme of £0.4 billion in the fourth quarter of 2014. VNB, however, is lower than 2013, reflecting some competitive margin compression on new scheme wins, alongside the impact of auto-enrolment business, where initial premiums start relatively low. Notwithstanding this, our focus on pricing discipline has been resolute and is key to this disciplined growth and increase in scale. Looking now at the protection business, where the performance has been resilient despite the competitive market environment. We've made sound progress improving cash generation in this business and have halved the underlying free surplus drag compared to last year. Controlling the cost of writing new business has been important here, with the £7 million reduction in IMB reflecting pricing discipline, the optimisation of reinsurance arrangements, as well as some targeted use of financial reinsurance in the first half. Pleasingly, volumes are up 6% in the period, building through our relationships with financial advisers. Notwithstanding this, but again, exactly as guided, VNB has not reached the heights of last year. Now, here, mix has been a factor with a lower proportion of the more profitable group income protection products sold in 2014. Also a factor, of course, is the start of year long-term interest rates, which had increased compared to 2013 and effectively reduced the worth of future profits in today's terms. In the third of our UK businesses, retirement income, 2014 has been a year of change. Now, I've spoken before about the conscious improvements to the competitiveness of our annuity propositions, and the impact of this flows straight into the lower free surplus generation. The impact of the Chancellor's 2014 budget on volumes is also increasingly apparent, although I remain pleased that our sales, which benefit from a significant backbook of guaranteed annuities, have only fallen by 15%. Notwithstanding this, over the last few months, we have seen further indications that customers are deferring their decisions ahead of the changes in April. Although remember, please, that the flip side of this means that we continue to earn AMCs on their pensions invested through us. Unsurprisingly, value of new business is lower. But whilst it appears that we are spending a bit more to earn a bit less VNB, given the market conditions, I'm happy to be allocating capital where we can achieve a 9% plus margin and a mid-teens IRR. Furthermore, we are well placed to continue to support our large customer base as they make important retirement planning decisions. And Andy will talk more about our new propositions, including our new platform, which will launch next month in a few moments. But first, I want to move on to our international business, where performance in 2014 remains challenged by difficult market conditions across its regions. The underlying free surplus at £23 million is below the level reported in 2013, with the reduction in expected returns more than offsetting the lower investment in new business. Now, as I said at half year, international surplus generation is closely linked to regular premium new business flows, with this being weighted towards a product's early years. So lower sales in 2013 when compared to 2012 has therefore meant lower expected returns in 2014. However, as we saw in the earlier group SFS slide, overall international SFS is better than last year, reflecting the non-recurrence of 2013's adverse operating variances. Now, the sales trends are also reflected in the VNB performance, although on the new business front, there has been some marked improvement in the second half of the year. APE in the second half of 2014 is up 34% on the first half, with the business benefiting from both regulatory changes in the Middle East to prevent sales by unlicensed companies and increased bond sales. Notwithstanding the signs of optimism, and again as I flagged as a risk at half year, the international division will not be paying a 2014 dividend to the group. In addition, regulatory changes in Hong Kong just coming into effect will be a headwind into 2014. Let's move on and look at the group IFRS result. Now, as I said at the start, the IFRS result shows a strong improvement on last year, with strong in-force surplus growth and higher expected returns on shareholder assets more than offsetting movements in new business strain. Headline growth of 38% is pleasing, but even looking at the result before one-off items, despite those items being conscious management actions for the benefits of shareholders and customers, the underlying result is still up materially. Key drivers of our in-force growth are set out on the right, with the benefit of management actions such as the first phase of the with-profit annuity reallocations, economics, and new business written in 2013 more than offsetting the runoff of the in-force book. Expected returns on shareholder assets have also grown and reflect the improved long-term rates at the start of 2014. And this benefit has been supplemented by the increased contribution from higher-yielding asset classes, such as the syndicated loans mandate that we began investing in the first half of 2014. Elsewhere, the results are pretty much in line with 2013, with perhaps the exception of other income and charges, which benefit from both the absence of certain provisions in 2013 relating to Sesame, as well as reduced overhead costs following the simplified governance structure put in place last year. Finally, the one-off items that I mentioned earlier are shown in the line principal reserving changes and one-offs. Those arising in the 2014 result are again set out bottom right. And the first of these reflects our revision to long-term longevity assumptions, with this benefiting both the Heritage and UK divisions. The next two I've talked about already in the context of the FSS result, and the presentation of the second phase of the with-profit annuity reallocation is consistent with that completed in 2013. Let me look briefly now at expenses. And overall, I'm pleased with the further reduction in operating costs, showing a continuation of the good work that we've undertaken in recent years. The improvements can be seen in the lower corporate costs, where duplicate governance has been stripped away, and also in maintenance costs, where our outsourcing arrangements are delivering contractual savings. Elsewhere, and partially offsetting these improvements, acquisition costs have increased modestly, largely in the UK division to support the new business growth and increased business scale. Development costs are broadly flat. Moving over to the right-hand side, I've shown a breakdown of our non-recurring spend. Now, the top three elements here relate to programmes that you will be familiar with, but the separation and integration programme has now completed, with no further spend anticipated. And this, combined with the outsourcing programme, is delivering on our expected savings. Working down the column, the Solvency II programme also continues to progress well and in line with our expectations. However, given the timescales that we're working to on the programme, we should acknowledge that it will be reviewed in the light of the proposed acquisition by Aviva. The fourth block here, where we have spent £21 million in the year, relates to our response to the significant regulatory change in the new pensions and annuity legislation areas. The penultimate item reflects the costs of the ongoing Sesame strategic review and the provision of financial support, which is not expected to be repaid. And finally, other non-recurring costs relate mainly to part of the costs in respect of the proposed acquisition by Aviva. Moving on then to MCEV briefly. Well, the MCEV result here at £498 million is down on 2013, with the growth in expected returns more than offset by the lower VNB, which itself, of course, reflects the retirement income trends that we saw earlier. Despite this, the MCV does demonstrate the value created by the business in other ways. As shown in the IFRS result, the initiatives undertaken in the Heritage division have created long-term value, with these benefits recognised in the other operating variances and operating assumption changes lines. I've broken the first of these out on the right-hand side, given their materiality, and shown alongside the other material benefit, principally from our improved modelling of the time value of options and guarantees, including realigning it with our economic capital model. These benefits are partially offset by adverse experience across all divisions, with some adverse persistency and mortality experience in the UK and international divisions, and some expense overruns in Heritage. To complete the picture, MCV development costs are below last year's level, but remember that the costs of the international new business platform were provided for in 2013. So let's look now at the capital position. Well, we retain a strong capital position with an estimated Solvency I IGCA surplus of £2.3 billion, which gives us a coverage ratio at 240%. This is practically unchanged from 2013 and shows good resilience to market movements. Similarly, our economic capital position is also strong, with a coverage ratio of 196%. Available shareholder assets are up on last year at £1,066,000,000. And as we reported previously, the £200 million syndicated loans mandate has been fully invested. Now, these are strong positions and include the consideration received on the sale of Lombard. So let's have a look at how they have moved over the year. Now, what I've done here on the left-hand side is show you a couple of waterfalls which take us from last year's IGCA and ASA positions. Most of the elements are relatively standard, with surplus emerging and external dividend paid during the year being what I would call normal annual movements. But in the third block of each walk, you will see the benefit of the Lombard sale, with this driving the improvement in each measure. And we've shown this net of the £30 million worth of shares repurchased prior to the announcement of the proposed Aviva transaction. Separately, within ASA, we have decided to set aside an additional £138 million of working capital to meet the capital requirements expected to arise in relation to the DWP charge cap, due to be introduced, of course, next month. But do note, however, that this capital requirement will no longer be required under Solvency II. Finally, the slide notes the intention to pay a full-year dividend of 31.15 pence per share, and this includes the proposed second interim dividend of 24.1 pence per share and therefore a 10 pence uplift, which depends on the completion of the acquisition by Aviva. And so in summary, a lot has changed, but we have continued to deliver. We've grown cash generation by 15%. IFRS returns are up strongly at both headline and underlying levels. We successfully sold Lombard. We've maintained a strong capital position, whilst, of course, positioning the business well for the future. Well, that's it from me, in more ways than one. And now I hand you over to Andy.
I was worried we were going to get into a Two Ronnie sketch or something there for a minute, but thanks, Tim. As Tim has covered, it's been a strong performance by the business in 2014. What I'd like to focus on is the overall transformation of the Friends Life Group over the last 4 years. And in particular, emphasise the capabilities that we've built for the future with Aviva. And the key messages are, Friends Life Group is, and always has been, all about strong cash generation and growth. We've been clear and consistent in our strategy and its execution, with the three key drivers of this being restructuring the business and cost reduction, superior backbook management, and leveraging our scale to drive profitable growth. All of this results in strong shareholder returns and distinctive capabilities, meaning we're well positioned for the future. So let me take each of these key messages in turn. Starting with cash generation and growth. If I take you back to when we started the integration and the baseline numbers in 2010, you can see that it was not a great starting point. However, from that base, we have consistently delivered growing cash year on year, every year. We've also turned around VNB, strengthening cash tomorrow. And while it's clearly known that VNB has been impacted in 2014 as customers have deferred retirement following last year's budget, the other side of the coin, of course, is that we continue to receive AMCs on their assets. After the budget announcements last year, we said that there would be no impact on our ability to generate cash in the shorter term, and our results today have confirmed this. All in all, a strong performance. So let me move on to the three key drivers of our financial performance, and firstly, the restructuring of the business. We rationalised from 13 open products, largely on different platforms, down to three core products and platforms. And this year has seen us successfully complete the migration of the corporate benefits business that was on the old Embassy platform. We've disposed of some international businesses, most notably the successful sale of Lombard this year for £316 million. We're also in the process of transforming the FPI businesses, having exited certain non-core markets such as Germany in 2013, replatformed FPI's new business in 2014. We're on track to transfer the remaining in-force business onto the new platform in 2015. And today we've announced in our RNS that the international business continues to work with the Japanese regulator on its licence application and expects to be authorised in the second quarter of this year. And we've delivered significant integration cost synergy savings, keeping true to our philosophy of rigorous financial discipline. The £160 million here represents one-third of our baseline 2010 cost base. And our desire to continue to control costs can clearly be seen in our results this year, where we've yet again reduced our operating expenses. We clearly have a distinctive capability in restructuring businesses, delivering substantial cost synergies and hence significant value for our shareholders. The second key driver is backbook management. So as well as the cost reductions I've just covered, we've also undertaken capital optimisation initiatives, streamlining seven UK life companies down to two. This delivered nearly £300 million of capital releases. Going forward, the potential to deploy this capability in an economic capital world is exciting. We've also undertaken a number of revenue optimisation initiatives, generating further cash from the backbook. And we're always looking for new ways to do this. For example, in 2014, we not only continued the annuity reallocations from the with-profit fund and the asset migration from F&C to Schroders and FLI, but also recaptured £1.6 billion of assets backing annuities that were previously reinsured. This recapture alone generates a further £13 million per annum of SFS from 2015. Including this transaction, the heritage revenue optimisation initiatives that were carried out in 2014 have delivered £28 million per annum of additional SFS from 2015, on top of the £16 million uplift that was generated through the revenue optimisation initiatives in previous years. In aggregate, all these initiatives executed to date have delivered a £44 million uplift to SFS from 2015 onwards. And there are still further initiatives that can be done, either by ourselves or as part of the enlarged Aviva Group, as the acquisition completes. The net effect of this superior backbook management capability means that over the last few years, the cash generation that we have delivered from the backbook has actually increased year by year, rather than the runoff that one might ordinarily expect. Our distinctive capability in driving value from backbooks is why we put M&A back on the agenda for Friends Life last year, which will clearly be delivered with the creation of the UK's largest backbook following the completion of the Aviva transaction. And then the third area of our strong improvement in both cash and growth is the open businesses, leveraging our scale positions to drive profitable growth. We have three areas of new business focus, the first two of which are covered on this slide. In corporate benefits, we're the number two player and have shown the benefits of operational leverage in practice. We've grown assets to £22 billion, while, as Tim said earlier, outgoings have been reduced, thus improving the operating leverage of this business. This has led to significant increases in underlying free surplus, which has grown by nearly £20 million this year. Hence my confidence in our ability standalone to grow cash going forwards. And of course, this is just one of our open businesses. But equally, If you then think about the us significantly increasing our corporate pension assets following the Aviva transaction, combined with our proven ability to control costs in this business, I think you'll agree this is exciting. And of course, there's hard evidence here that we can both grow and integrate successfully at the same time. And then in terms of our protection business, again, as shown on the charts on the right, we've seen an excellent turnaround in both new business profits and internal rate of return. This is driven by the market-leading product innovation and the strong distribution partnerships that we continue to develop, like our recently announced new product launch with Virgin Money, all whilst controlling the cost of writing new business, as Tim covered earlier. The third area of new business focus historically was annuities in the retirement income market. I could equally show you a chart here demonstrating the strong VNB growth to the end of 2013, together with the budget impacts in 2014 that I covered earlier. However, what I think is most relevant to cover is how we are responding to this external change. We are well placed to meet the ongoing needs of Friends Life customers going forwards, where the future is much broader than annuities alone, and additional propositions are needed to succeed. The pension reforms create a real opportunity for us as we move to a world where there'll be more regular customer engagement. So in April, our new platform, My Savings, will be in the market for the benefit of our substantial Friends Life customer base, representing at least 1 in 9 maturing pensions in the UK. The new pension freedoms will give our customers a number of options. Obviously, they could choose to keep their savings invested in their pension. However, should customers wish to access their pension saving, this screenshot shows of our new platform illustrates 3 of the options that will be available to them from April. We've used the example of a typical mass affluent customer, a male in good health with a £35,000 pension pot who is aiming to retire at age 66. Firstly, this customer can choose to purchase an annuity and receive an annual income of nearly £8,400. Now, this will seem high initially to some of the actuaries in the room, but it does include his state pension. In our view, and this is consistent with our customer research, this is the most helpful way of showing our customers what overall income they could expect to receive. Secondly, in the middle of the chart, he could draw down a higher annual income from his pot. In this example, he wishes to maximise his personal tax-free income allowance of £10,500 per annum, again including his state pension. The tool highlights that this customer could expect to receive this higher income until he is 73, but thereafter would have to rely on only his state pension. To some of you, it may seem that the drawdown option doesn't last very long, but the example assumes no underlying investment return. This is important, as investment returns will vary, and while strong growth could be achievable, investments could also fall. It's important that the risk to the customer of his pot quickly running out is clearly highlighted. Finally, as the third option on the screenshot, the customer could take his whole pot as a lump sum. Here the tool highlights that he could expect to pay £4,700 of income tax, assuming he receives no other income during the tax year. One thing is clear. With more choice at retirement, our customers will need more support. We are fully engaging with customers, recognising that they require our support to make informed retirement decisions. Our Retirement Information Centre is resourced and ready. We have added to our dedicated team of people who can support customers and answer questions about the new options available to people approaching retirement. Indeed, we've already started mailing retirement guides to our customers in February. This customer engagement will be supported by our new platform with a suite of propositions. The My Savings platform will offer a broad range of retirement saving options, including drawdown, annuities, lump sums, plus NISAs, share trading, etc. There'll be other extensive tools as well to help customers make informed retirement savings decisions, including tax information and support. Just faced with the 3 options we have on our screen, our customers can use these tools to weigh up the pros and cons and better understand the impact of their decision. As the detailed rules are still emerging, I think the whole industry will experience some bumps in the road in the early days of the new pension reforms. However, in time, I think this represents exciting opportunities to meet a broader range of our customers' needs. So what has this combination of these key drivers delivered for shareholders? In January 2011, just as we completed the Bupa acquisition, the market cap was £3.4 billion. Shareholder value has more than doubled, representing a total shareholder return of over 20% per annum, including significant returns of cash. But as importantly is the capability we have built. I've consistently said that I remain confident today, and I remain confident today, that Friends Life would have an attractive standalone future. However, I also have consistently said that it's clear that inorganic options have the potential to deliver more value for shareholders. I think this is particularly true of the proposed transaction with Aviva, where we can leverage the distinctive capabilities I've talked about to drive attractive returns for the shareholders of both groups. I'm particularly excited about the prospect of leveraging the restructuring capabilities of both groups to drive cost reduction and superior backbook management, while at the same time having even greater scale to leverage leadership positions in the UK and drive profitable new business growth. So, as I summarise the key messages today, you can see that the benefits of the Aviva transaction and the capabilities that have driven the value delivered by Friends Life are well aligned. Our consistency of strategy and delivery means we have time and again delivered strong cash generation and growth by focusing on three key levers: restructuring and cost reduction, superior backbook management, and leveraging scale to drive profitable growth. All of this has delivered a strong shareholder return and leaves the business well placed with these distinctive capabilities for an attractive future in combination with Aviva. And with that, we'll now move to questions. But as we do, two observations, if I may. Firstly, given we're in an offer period, as you know, it would not be appropriate to provide any forward-looking statements or forecasts. And secondly, as Tim mentioned at the start of the presentation, immediately following this presentation, Mark and Tom will lead the Aviva presentation. So questions on the enlarged Aviva group, we're going to save for there. I'll be here in the front row to add any comments as appropriate. And we'll try and keep the questions here to focused on the Friends Life results. So with that, who would like to kick us off? Ming, do you want to kick off?
Morning, Ming Zhu from Canaccord. Just two questions, please. Your new MySaving platform, what sort of scale do you need to build in order to reach break even or become more efficient? And the second question, with those new products you're launching, what are the competitive advantages you think you have in order to retain the backbook customers, retiring and gain new customers? And do you think pricing is a quite important driver in for the mass affluent market? Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the questions. So in terms of the scale to break even, we've built the My Savings platform using the same technology and platform that we use for the My Money platform, our corporate wrap platform, which is already market leading in that market. So yeah, effectively, you've seen the benefits of operating leverage we have in the corporate benefits market. We'll use the same underlying technology for the retirement income market, and incidentally Aviva are also building on that same technology, so while we've got work to do to bring the two together in due course, that will come together well. In terms of the new products and competitive advantage, I have to say my view on this is the insurance industry always goes to, in any change, to inventing lots of new products with lots more features on it. What's going to be critical here is customer engagement and helping customers understand their options. So I'm confident we will have a competitive range of products and propositions. I think pricing being competitive will be important. I don't think you need to be market leading. I think it needs to be competitive pricing. The differentiator will be customer engagement. And I just highlight to you what we've achieved in the annuity market. Most of our peers are quoting individual annuity sales down 40, 50% plus. Our individual annuity sales are down 15%. Customer engagement is a driver of that. Also, the scale of our guaranteed annuity book is a driver of that as well. But we've had a lot of focus on how do we engage with our existing customers coming up to retirement. Oliver?
Oliver Steele, Deutsche Bank. I've got two quite similar questions. One is, how long do you expect to see your platforms sort of continue in their own, you know, on their own, as opposed to sort of merging in with Aviva's? And then secondly, talking about backbook retention, have you seen any impact, any fallout yet on any part of your business from the proposed deal with Aviva?
So I'll let Tim take the second of those. In terms of the first, we've done some early integration planning work, but ultimately until we get to completion and get kind of full line of sight with a single management team across both sets of products, platforms and systems, we can't finalise those plans in terms of timescales. So on day one, we'd expect to have both offers in the market separately branded, and we'd look to then finalise our plans from there to bring that together. Couldn't put timescales on that at this stage.
Thanks, Andy. Oliver, I'd honestly say to you, I think we've seen very little impact, almost indiscernible, if it's there, any impact. Most of the recent trends we're seeing in the business are around customers who are deferring some of their retirement decisions. Maybe they're waiting for the new legislation to come into place. So otherwise, we're not really seeing anything that I could discern as transaction-related.
Ashik, and then Andrew.
Hi, Ashik Musadi from JP Morgan. Just a couple of questions. On your protection, the new business free cash flow generation is still negative. Can you give us some thoughts on that? Because recently one of your competitors has shown very strong improvement in their cash generation from protection business. So that's the first thing. And secondly, some thoughts on corporate pension book. You've started to see now net inflows. What is driving that? I mean, what has changed over the past year or so that you're getting positive inflows? Is it to do with customer retention? So some thoughts on that. Thank you.
Sure. Tim, do you want to take the first one? I'll take the second.
Yeah. I think the big thing you have to remember is that our protection business unit is relatively young in terms of age, and therefore the back book, where you've still got a lot of the recurring premiums coming off from products sold previously, is in heritage. So you're actually seeing, therefore, a lot of the cash flows from the protection book are still in the heritage division, so you can't separately see them. So when I look at the new business flows, I look at it and go, am I happy with that? And I say, we are reducing the strain, we are increasing the IRRs to 19%. Am I happy to be deploying discretionary shareholder capital there to earn a satisfactory return? Yes.
And then on the corporate benefit business, it's basically the strength of our customer proposition and then the relationships with our clients and the employee benefit consultants. So the net fund flows of 0.6 billion, which is after the 0.4 billion large scheme that basically went into a segregated type, unbundled type approach. So it's sort of a billion prior to that. Very pleased with that progress, and it's down to the strength of our proposition and the relationships we have. But at the same time as growing the assets and growing the net fund flows, we've also been bringing the outgoings down, and hence driving the operating leverage. And you know, pleased to see that. Corporate benefits alone has underlying free surplus gain of nearly 20 million. That's just one of our open businesses that's delivered that. Andrew.
Good morning, Sandra Green, Autonomous. Just a couple of questions. One, Steve Webb's growing annoyance at some companies not taking charges down in the corporate pensions world. How do you reflect on that? And also, more broadly for the industry, the challenge which the FCA has put up in terms of heritage books, in terms of high surrender charges and tying customers in. I mean, how do you see this developing over time, and do you think it's a challenge to the business?
Okay, I'll take the first and ask Tim to answer the second. So
yeah, I might struggle with that one because I was thinking of the answer to the first while he was asking the second, so I haven't got a clue
If I answer the first, you can think about it.
Then I can ask him about the second, and then I can answer that one first. So why don't you go first and I'll go second?
Oh, dear, I'll miss you, Tim. Like others, we had our session with Steve, and we've had active engagement with the IPB, and I mean, we're one of the first companies to set up the governance committee and everything else, so we're very much at the forefront. If you look at our share of the total market and then look at our share of the assets that might be over the kind of 1% coming out of that IPB, our share in the latter is much, much smaller than the share in the former. In other words, we've done an awful lot of work already to get our business into the more modern products and platforms. And a good example of that would be the one we completed last year on the embassy transition. So that was about 5 billion of assets that moved from the old embassy platform with a lot of more complicated products and charging structures, and we moved all that across onto our core mainstream platforms, and that's now been completed. But obviously that that then gets all of that business into the new world at the same time. And I mean, Steve Webb was particularly complimentary about the fact we'd done that and very interested about how we'd done it and how we'd gone about it. And I imagine he spoke to one or two other providers about, well, look, Friends Life have done this. Why can't you guys do something similar? So,
yeah, the advantage of going first. Were you asking about surrender charges?
Which is back book.
Yeah, okay. I mean, the FCA legacy review, I guess, is where most of people are focusing on here. So, obviously, we were one of, I think it was a dozen odd companies that were part of that, and they spent some time with us in the autumn. No particular issues arose from that we have had any kind of briefing on at the moment, although let's remember that the FCA aren't due to publish their findings from that until sometime towards the end of the second quarter, I think, is the expected timetable for that. The way I look at it sort of holistically is that one of the major benefits we have is the structural benefit of having a heritage unit, who are therefore focused on the kinds of issues that the legacy review is going to be looking at. So they don't spend so much time thinking about the latest product or the latest product tweak or the pricing of new business or this and that. They are focused on 4 million of our 5 million customers are in heritage. They're focused on providing service to them, on providing the right level of interaction. So, I mean, if I just think about some of the systems development we do and the work migrating people onto the Diligenta platforms. Customers don't pay for that, but they get a modern e-enabled platform, which they can either use some features of, or it certainly enables our people to get one view of the customer much more quickly, to provide them with better, quicker service. Customers don't pay for that. That's just part of looking after customers. They then stay with us for longer, and we see the benefit of that in the cash flows. It's nice to see expected return in heritage rising. I mean, to see a runoff book with increasing cash flow, I'll settle for that.
Right, Alan, and then Andrew over here.
Thanks, Alan Devlin from Barclays. A couple of questions on the My Savings platform. First of all, if you pick the drawdown option, what are the products underpinning that people can choose from? And then secondly, Is it My Savings a completely mobile platform where effectively becomes the D2C type contract, the Hargreaves Lansdowne type portal, and get people consolidate their other pensions onto the platform? And is that what you expect to happen? People don't want to have four different drawdown platforms.
Sure. I've actually got Andy Curran in the front row here, who runs our UK division, and I'm going to pass that to him, if I may. So stand up, Andy. Yeah?
Sure. I'll take the second part of your question first. So at the moment we have our corporate platform. So if you were to move and leave your corporate platform, your employer, and move into be an individual retail customer of ours, policyholder of ours, you can do that seamlessly. So that will work. In terms of the individual drawdown and products such, decumulation products, new products coming on board. They're just as Andy described earlier, and we'll continue to look to build and develop new products as we go along. But as Andy again said, we're not just talking about just product development. This is about customer engagement as well. But in terms of managing, just to confirm, just to manage across the corporate platform into the retail platform, that's exactly what the My Savings platform will do. Thank you.
Andrew.
Thanks. Morning. It's Andy Sinclair from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Firstly, of the 1 in 9 retirees who are Friends Life customers, how many of those do you think are unique customers to Friends Life, and how many have pension policies with competitors as well? Secondly, on the 1.6 billion of assets recaptured, are there other assets in similar reinsurance agreements that could potentially be recaptured at some point? And thirdly, just with a number of competitors looking at financial advisor businesses, just wondered if you could give us any thoughts on the outcomes of the strategic review on Sesame. Thanks.
Thanks, Andrew. So I'll do 1 and 3 and let Tim do 2. So in terms of our 1 in 9 retirees, many of them will have other pension pots elsewhere. And generally, our book of business, we would say that if you look at it by funds rather than customer numbers, by funds, about 70% of the customers do not have an active IFA relationship. About 30% do by funds. It'll be less by customer numbers. But those that do have an active IFA relationship, it isn't generally speaking, in most cases, it isn't the IFA that originally introduced them to us in the first place. So effectively, most customers go into this 50-plus retirement journey kind of unattached as far as our book is concerned, and that's where we think the customer engagement is all important, because they will have pots elsewhere, and if we are the strongest at engaging with those customers as they go on that journey, there's the opportunity to consolidate those other pots into us, and it's one of the drivers of the positive net fund flows on corporate benefits we talked about earlier on. We've done a number of direct offer transfer exercises to try and get pension customers to consolidate other pots across into us, and that's been a key driver of those net fund flows. In terms of the strategic review of Sesame Bancorp Group, that is ongoing, and obviously we would update the market as and when that there's more to say, but that's ongoing at this stage.
For the second part of your question, no, I would encourage you to see this transaction recapturing the $1.6 billion as pretty much a unique. I don't see that being we don't have a list of these that we will be going for. That's pretty much a unique transaction, but a very satisfactory transaction with a great profit footprint. And to do that with virtually a net nil, single-digit impact on SFS, and yet generate $13 million per annum going forward, I think that's a good trade.
Any other questions? Well, that's what I call perfect timing, because my little schedule here says we're due to finish at 9:30, have a coffee break, and then come back for Mark and Tom and the Aviva presentation at 9:45. So we'll obviously be around in the coffee break. You'll be able to pick up any questions after the Aviva presentation as well. But I look forward to seeing you all back here in about 15 minutes' time. Thank you very much.